Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the most interesting stories trending on Hacker News. Today is Monday, August 11th, 2025, and this is episode number 122.
It's a big day for tech news. On the show today, we're talking about a major shakeup at GitHub as it gets pulled deeper into the Microsoft mothership following its CEO's resignation.
Then we'll dive into a perennial Hacker News favorite, the endless search for the perfect to-do list app, and why one developer gave up and went back to a simple text file.
We'll also cover a significant legal battle in the UK, where Wikipedia has lost its initial challenge against the new Online Safety Act, raising some serious questions about the future of anonymity online.
And we've got two more for you, a deep dive into a new AI coding tool called Claude Code that has some developers rethinking their entire workflow.
And finally, a look at how OpenSSH is preparing for the future with post-quantum cryptography and what that means for the security of your connections. Let's get into it.
First up, a story from The Verge that's topping the charts on Hacker News with 850 points. GitHub is no longer independent at Microsoft after CEO resignation. The news is that GitHub CEO Thomas Dohmgay has resigned to, in his words, become a startup founder again.
And the big twist here is that Microsoft isn't replacing him. There will be no new CEO of GitHub. Instead, the entire GitHub leadership team will now report directly into Microsoft's core AI team. This is a pretty significant moment. When Microsoft bought GitHub back in 2018 for $7.5 billion, the big promise was that it would operate as a separate, independent company. This move feels like the final chapter of that promise.
Exactly. It's been a slow integration, but this is a definitive step. GitHub is no longer an independent entity with its own leader. It's now a division within Microsoft's broader AI strategy. And the Hacker News comments, as you can imagine, are lighting up with opinions on this.
There's a fascinating thread kicked off by a user named PJLP, who says, "The Microsoft being the cool guys phase is slowly over." They point to things like the death of Xamarin, the limitations on cross-platform.NET, and now this GitHub move as evidence that the old, strategic, business-first Microsoft is back in the driver's seat.
And of course, someone immediately replied laughing at the very idea that Microsoft was ever cool, listing all the classic grievances from the 90s and 2000s, being the enemy of open source, Internet Explorer, vendor lock-in with things like ActiveX. It really captures the long memory of the developer community.
It does, but what's interesting is the debate that follows. Others argue that view is 15 years out of date, pointing to Microsoft's huge open source contributions like VS Code. But then the counter-argument comes right back, citing things like ads in the Windows Start menu as proof that the evil is still there, just in a different form.
That ad debate is a whole rabbit hole. People start comparing Microsoft, Apple, and even Ubuntu, arguing over who puts ads in their OS and how egregious they are. It really speaks to a general distrust of these massive corporations and their relentless push for monetization and user data.
One user, Cocaine, even posted their personal evilness ranking of the big tech companies. They put Google at number one, followed by Meta, then Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple. It's a fun, if slightly grim, parlor game.
But bringing it back to GitHub, the sentiment is clear. This isn't just a leadership change. For many on Hacker News, this is the slow-motion embrace, extend, extinguish playbook we've always been wary of. The fear is that GitHub will now be optimized purely as a delivery mechanism from Microsoft's Azure Cloud and AI products, potentially at the expense of the community and the platform's core identity. The era of independence is officially over.
All right, next up, we have a story that I think every single person listening can relate to. The article is titled, "I Tried Every To-Do App and Ended Up with a .txt File." It's got over 700 points, and it's a journey.
It really is. The author, Alireza Bashiri, walks us through his experience with all the big names, Notion, Todoist, Things3, Trello, OmniFocus. He describes the familiar cycle. You find a new app, you get excited, you spend hours, maybe even days, building the perfect system with tags, projects, and labels.
And you feel really productive doing it. But it's what one commenter called procrastination dressed up as organization. The author points out that these systems often fall apart, they become too complex, the company gets acquired, or you just spend more time managing the system than actually doing the work.
His breaking point was when his phone died and he couldn't access his list. He just grabbed a sticky note, wrote down 4 tasks, and crushed them all. That led him back to the simplest possible solution, a single txt.txt file on his desktop.
His system is beautiful in its simplicity. He creates a new date heading each day, lists his tasks, and as he completes them, he either deletes the line or adds a note about what happened. The file becomes a combination to-do list and work log. It's fast, searchable with Command plus F, and it's future-proof. A text file will be readable in 50 years, which you probably can't say for your Notion workspace.
The Hacker News comments really explore the philosophy behind this. One user, Egram, makes the classic counterargument. People who use text files just end up rebuilding all the features of a dedicated app, but poorly. They suggest the logical next step is something like Emacs with Org Mode, which is basically a text file-based system on steroids.
But then you get the perfect response from user Pancake Mouse, who says that the whole point is that people want a system that comes naturally to them. Learning someone else's complex system, even a powerful one like Org Mode, is often harder than just building your own simple thing from scratch.
And another user, Aurornis, drives this home, saying the most productive people they know use minimal systems, a Google Doc, or even just sticky notes. They argue that the people with the most elaborate, custom-built productivity stacks are often the least productive. They're obsessed with the tools, not the work.
There's a fantastic quote from Merlin Mann someone shared. Joining a Facebook group about productivity is like buying a chair about jogging. It perfectly captures the trap of focusing on the meta work instead of the actual work.
Ultimately, the consensus seems to be that the author is onto something. The best system is the one you actually use. And for many, simple beats sophisticated every time. The tool is just there to get thoughts out of your head so you can focus. Everything else is a distraction.
Let's shift gears to a pretty serious story out of the UK. The BBC reports, Wikipedia loses challenge against Online Safety Act. This has been a brewing conflict, and it just reached a new milestone.
So, to set the stage, the UK has this very broad and powerful new law called the Online Safety Act. The Wikimedia Foundation, the nonprofit behind Wikipedia, is worried that Wikipedia will be classified as a Category 1 service, which is the strictest tier, meant for huge social media platforms.
If that happens, they could be forced to verify the identities of all their volunteer editors. This would completely undermine the anonymous and pseudonymous editing model that has built Wikipedia into what it is today. It's an existential threat to how they operate.
Wikipedia launched a legal challenge to the way the government wrote these rules, arguing they were too broad and flawed. But the High Court has just rejected that challenge. The court said the door is still open for future challenges if the UK's regulator, Ofcom, actually does classify them as Category 1. But for now, it's a loss for Wikipedia.
The Hacker News comments go straight to the heart of the matter. The top comment suggests Wikipedia should just block access in the UK. It's the nuclear option, but it's a tactic we've seen discussed for years when these kinds of laws pop up. The idea is to make the public feel the pain and pressure the politicians.
But the most insightful part of the discussion is a deep dive into public opinion. One user posts a YouGov poll suggesting that the British public overwhelmingly supports these rules. But then the rest of the thread proceeds to absolutely dismantle that poll.
It's a masterclass in critical thinking. Commenters point out that the poll question was incredibly leading. It asked if people support age verification to access websites that may contain pornographic material. Of course, most people will say yes to that.
Right. But as another commenter points out, the reality of the law is much broader. The question could have been phrased as, do you support being required to upload your ID or a face photo to access any website that allows users to interact? The answers would likely be very different.
There's a fantastic anecdote from a user named Lurk who lives in New Zealand. They mention a referendum where 91% of people voted for a proposal that included bringing back hard labor in prisons. They say they've never met a single person who voted for it who actually realized that's what they were voting for. It was buried in a long, complicated question about victims' rights.
It's a perfect example of how these things can be manipulated. So while Wikipedia lost this specific battle, the larger war over the soul of the internet continues. These broad online safety laws, however well-intentioned, are clashing with fundamental principles of free expression and anonymity, and Wikipedia is right on the front lines.
Okay, let's talk about AI. Our next story is a blog post titled Claude Code is All You Need, and it's a really fun, experimental take on the new wave of AI coding assistants.
The author describes trying various AI coding tools, but finding them clunky. Then they tried Claude Code, and it just clicked. They were so impressed, they canceled their GPT subscription and even upgraded to the $100 a month plan for Anthropic's best model.
The most interesting part of the article is an experiment where the author tries to vibe code a clone of the expense splitting app Splitwise. Vibe coding, as they define it, is creating software just by talking to the model without looking at or editing the code yourself.
And they found something fascinating. In their first attempt, they gave Claude a general prompt and it tried to build a super complex modern app with a Node.js backend, a separate frontend, and tons of dependencies. The result? It was completely broken and bloated, pulling in 500 megabytes of dependencies.
For the second attempt, they added just 5 bullet points to the prompt. Use a single index.php script, use SQL, no frameworks, raw SQL, minimalist design. And what happened? Claude spit out a single 30-kilobyte PHP file that worked perfectly.
It's such a great insight. All the frameworks and abstractions we build are for humans to manage complexity. But for an AI that can hold the entire code base in its context window, those abstractions can actually get in the way. Simplicity wins.
The Hacker News comments on this are just as fascinating, revealing this huge philosophical split in the developer community. On one side, you have people who are excited, saying this brings back the, wow, I can do anything feeling of when they first started coding.
But on the other side, you have a user named George Burdell, who says they could never get into these tools because they enjoy the actual process of crafting code. They see agents as a tool for extroverts and say if the industry moves this way, they'll just find a new career.
And then a user named Prone adds another layer of skepticism, arguing that you can't really offload a task to an LLM because you can't trust it. You have to review every line of code it produces with intense focus. Their analogy is perfect. It's not like working with a junior developer. It's like working with a junior developer who might be drunk and won't tell you.
I love that. It perfectly captures the current state of these tools. They are incredibly powerful, but the lack of reliability and logical consistency means you can't let your guard down. The article is a great look at the fun and potential, but the comments provide that crucial dose of reality about where we are today.
For our final story, we're looking at a page from OpenSSH.com titled OpenSSH Post-Quantum Cryptography. This is a big deal for the infrastructure of the internet. OpenSSH is proactively upgrading its security to defend against a future threat, quantum computers.
The core threat they're defending against is called a store now, decrypt later attack. The idea is that an adversary, say a government intelligence agency, can record all your encrypted SSH traffic today. They can't break the encryption now, but they can store that data for 10 or 20 years, and once they have a powerful enough quantum computer, they can go back and decrypt it all.
It's a scary thought. Everything you're doing today in a secure session could be read in the future. To prevent this, OpenSSH is rolling out new key agreement algorithms that are resistant to attacks from quantum computers. And starting with version 10.1, your SSH client will actually warn you if you connect to a server that isn't using this new post-quantum crypto.
Now, whenever you talk about new cryptography, two big questions come up, and the Hacker News comments dive right into them. The first is, are these new algorithms even trustworthy? They're so new, what if they're broken?
And OpenSSH has a very smart answer for this, which the top comment highlights. The new algorithms are implemented as hybrids. This means when you establish a connection, you're using both the new post-quantum algorithm and the classic trusted algorithm like X25519. The two are combined. So even if the new post-quantum part turns out to be completely broken, your connection is still at least as secure as it was before. It's a belt and suspenders approach.
The second question, raised by another commenter, is about implementation bugs. By using a hybrid scheme, you're doubling the amount of code running, which doubles your exposure to potential bugs or side channels. It's a valid concern.
It is, but the consensus among cryptographers, including the OpenSSH team, seems to be a worthwhile trade-off. The risk of a store now, decrypt later attack is real enough that it's worth taking on the manageable risk of potential implementation bugs in the new code, especially with the safety net of the hybrid design.
This is a really responsible, proactive move from the OpenSSH team. They're not waiting for the threat to be imminent. They're laying the groundwork now to protect data for decades to come. And they're doing it in a thoughtful, conservative way. So if you see that new warning pop up after you update, now you'll know why.
And that's a wrap for episode 122 of HN Pod. From Microsoft's tightening grip on GitHub to the simple beauty of a text file, it's been a day of big strategic shifts and back-to-basics philosophies.
We saw the ongoing clash between an open internet and government regulation, and the deep divide among developers about what role AI should play in their craft. It's a reminder that for every big, complex new technology, there's a powerful pull towards simplicity and security.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow with more top stories from Hacker News.